on ABC Local Radio. We are talking all about children's playgrounds on the program this morning. Rick McConaughey is a children's playground designer. He's also the regional vice president for the Play Association in Asia Pacific. Very good morning to you, Rick.
Good morning, Michael.
Thanks for joining us.
Pleasure.
Now, it's funny, we were discussing children's playgrounds on the program, I think it was about 3 or 4 years ago. I think we were discussing adults playing in children's playgrounds. And you rang us up and had a bit of a chat, and we were so impressed we stuck your number down, and we've rung you back a few years later to carry on the conversation. So thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So you're still working in children's playgrounds, obviously?
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, very much so.
Okay. And they have changed a lot, haven't they?
They are going through a bit of a metamorphosis at the moment. Well, they're always evolving, and I guess they reflect a little bit what's going on in the world to an extent, but yeah, at the moment they're looking a little different than they might have done 20-odd years ago. Well, some are anyway, probably the larger regional ones, and possibly a little bit more provision for all abilities and things like that.
Do you remember the rocket ship slides?
Yeah, I certainly do, yeah. And they were iconic and they were very memorable, and whatever the park was called and whoever it happened to be named after, it always became Rocket Ship Park for those that attended it.
We did a bit of a search a few months back to see how many of them actually are still standing around the country, and we found there's probably about 3 or 4 of them.
I was fascinated to hear that, actually, because there were various reasons they went, but it'd be fascinating to know where they were so I could go and revisit them.
There's one, I believe, in Benalla, I think. There's also one standing outside a factory, not in a... They must have bought it and shipped it and stuck it outside of the factory as a landmark, somewhere in Cheltenham in Melbourne, I think.
Uh-huh.
And I believe there's also one on the south coast of New South Wales.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But, there may be more than that, but they were the three we definitely heard about. And the old they don't make them like that anymore.
It's a bit of a reflection, isn't it, that two of them are still in parks and one isn't, but that you can count them on one hand when in actual fact they were quite prolific.
Yeah, there would have been, I reckon, probably 50 or 100 of them probably built around the country.
I can't begin to imagine how many there were, really, to be honest. I'm sure there were plenty. They would have, you know, made enough to make it an economically viable product, so they would have been all over the place. So.
Yeah, and it was in the days when all the playground equipment was made out of metal.
Yeah. Back in the good old days.
Yeah, and not very good things to play in hot weather.
Look, it is and it isn't, but the reality of hot weather, which is a fairly current topic of discussion, is that if the slide is hot, then you can pretty much guarantee everything around it is too. There's been various reports and stuff to suggest that the slide isn't that much hotter than the surrounding concrete, bitumen, swing seats, pretty much everything else. If it's a really hot day, then things are going to get really hot.
Yeah. But different now, of course. They're all made out of plasticky type mixtures.
Which still heats up to an extent, but not to the same extent.
Does. But one thing that I've noticed with the plastic is that you get quite a bit of static electricity coming off it.
Yeah, sorry, it's not a laugh, but it can be a bit of a shock for all concerned when that happens, because it's not always predictable. It won't necessarily happen on every piece of plastic equipment, but certainly it does, and it can be a bit shocking when it does.
Yeah, my young daughter, one of the first words she learned was static. We'd push her down the slide, she'd go, any static?
It's a wonderful reflection of how often you took her to the playground, so that's lovely.
Thank you, Rick, very nice of you. Yes, and they went also through a phase there where they were made of wood. It was very popular to make them out of the treated pine. But that all changed too, didn't it?
Yeah, well, there are. I mean, they have tended towards cypress and eco wood and various other things now that replaces that. But it is a little bit more a manipulable product, particularly on site. So it has some merit, and it brings a certain kind of, I guess, a naturalistic feel to it to an extent. But, certainly the treated... Well, not all treated pine, but CCA-treated pine, certainly. They're discouraging that use.
All right. And one final thing before we go to some calls. The swing, it still is the favourite. It's still the ultimate in children's playground rides. That's the most popular one.
It's kind of the touchstone. It's one that they'll often race to first, if only because it's... you know, a playground services a whole lot of kids, and the swing is often there's 2 or 3 or maybe 4 if you're lucky. So just the sheer fact that it's free and available is something to, you know, celebrate and get on and have your go, and it's incredibly exhilarating.
So, it is.
Yeah, it is. It's a great feature.
Still a lot of fun, all those G-forces for kids.
Yeah, that's right.
They love it.
And particularly for younger kids, the other thing that's a little bit sneaky is that it absolutely engages mum or dad or whoever you're with to be playing with you, and that's often the thing that motivates kids. Specifically is that it engages the carer that they're with to be playing with them directly and engaging with them directly.
So. Definitely, I've built up my arm muscles from doing all the swinging, quite a bit of it. But one thing I will notice, having been to a lot of children's playgrounds and tried a lot of swings out, they're not always sitting centre.
Yeah, and that, you know, that affects the ride, doesn't it? If you
Definitely.
Keep skewing off to the side, it affects everything. It's not as exhilarating a ride because you're always readjusting yourself.
Yeah, now I'm assuming I would know that all the playgrounds you build, of course, have perfectly centred swings.
Well, you do your best. You work with, I think some of the secrets to delivering play spaces is working with everyone who's involved, and that means right down to the people who are doing construction and installation and things like that. And if you can work up a decent rapport with them and just, you know, fine-tune things, then that can be a better experience for everyone involved.
Yep, definitely. All right, well, Rick, should we take some calls?
Oh, I'd love to.
No worries. 1-300-800-222 if you'd like to join us and talk about, well, modern playgrounds or the old-style playgrounds that you used to play in when you were a kid as well. 1-300-800-222. The text number is 1-9-774-774. Good morning, Graham. Graham, you there? Oh, I better take his line. Might help. Graham, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. What did you want to say?
I just have a couple of questions. I know we needed to move away from the large amounts of concrete in children's playgrounds because of the risk to the child. But my question is this, is that as we moved away from it, how much of the child's ability to make a risk assessment of their own safety did we take away?
All right, so you're saying we're probably making them a bit too safe, are we?
Well, the modern playground in the park has spun back a little bit, and we've now got swings and things happening again. But I'm looking more at those indoor playgrounds where everything seems to be foam rubber wrapped in vinyl for protection. As a child, I think we learn to work out how dangerous something is and by falling over. You learn what happens when you do fall over by actually falling over or by hurting yourself. The modern indoor playground doesn't allow for a child to learn those issues through the same method. So as an adult, are they capable of making the same risk assessments when they cross the road in front of traffic or when they drive cars?
All right, look, we'll put that one to our guest, Rick. You've heard what Graham's got to say there. Have you had anything to do with the designing of indoor play centres?
No, I haven't, but it's a similar... I have attended... I've got a 7-year-old and a 2.5-year-old, so I've had to go to them from time to time, and they serve a purpose and a function, and I tend to agree. There certainly was a period historically with the outdoor play spaces where it was recognised that there were certain things happening that had to be addressed. So as the pendulum swung, as it does, to an extent, and I think even the epidemiologists and so on would agree that to an extent there was an overreaction and risk was almost taken out of play spaces, which by definition sort of nearly killed them off. But there's a recognition now that they very much are about risk-taking and challenge, and the intention is to minimise the hidden hazards and maximise the capacity to do risk assessment and engage in challenging things. Now, in indoor spaces, that's a very controlled and managed environment, they are serving a slightly different purpose to outdoor play spaces. It's a different kind of experience and probably caters for a slightly different market too, I would suspect. So
yeah, sure. Yeah.
But they are very, very kind of managed and controlled, and there's padding everywhere.
Yeah, but there's a lot of kids running around bumping into each other as well.
I was about to say, you're far more likely to, you know, basically we need to be wrapping the kids in rubber too then, because it's far more likely it's going to be a collision because they're such intense and exciting.
That's right, they're running around like chooks with their
and
heads cut off.
And they're fired up on cake and red cordial.
Exactly. We had a big metal rocket slide in Canada too. They rock, said Jeff. Oh, there you go. They had them in Canada as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, one of my great colleagues in the IPA is based in Canada, and we often sort of reflect on what's happening historically and trend-wise in both countries.
Remember the spinning egg ride in the playground? Easiest way for a child to get rid of his lunch without digesting it.
Yeah, well, it was a good way for teenagers to avoid going and buying illegal beer too. You just spin around in that for 5 minutes and you can't stand up straight and tend to lose your lunch. So they were quite handy.
They were pretty full on, those spinning eggs. It was bad because every now and then you might get pushed in one and stuck, but the bigger kids would start spinning you around and wouldn't let the thing stop.
Look, and they're in, you know, a play space is a microcosm of life, isn't it? And, yeah, we're confronted with challenges beyond what the designer did or should or could reasonably consider. But, yeah, that's an unfortunate thing. But it's also a reality that play is occasionally romanticised and it isn't always lovely. And in actual fact, kids use play to a very great extent to kind of reflect on, process, you know, whatever other things are going on in their life. So, play isn't always wonderful and shiny and bright. There is an occasional darker side, and that's certainly one of them.
Yeah, and across the board, it's an important part of childhood development, learning how to get on with others and share and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and develop inner resilience and capacity to recover, and also developing competencies and things, but also equally just to have fun in an unstructured and unprescribed kind of way, because everything's becoming a little bit organised and a little bit sort of predictable. So play is one of those last sort of bastions of spontaneous interaction with your peers and your environment. So it's a pretty wonderful vehicle for exploring the world we're in.
Good point, and you're lucky to be working in the field by the sounds of it.
Yeah, dead lucky. It's wonderfully diverse. The people I work with, because I work very much with communities from the children through to, you know, corporate sponsors and things like that. So I get to meet a wonderful range of people doing something and leaving a legacy of hopefully some pretty interesting spaces to explore.
And you must get a buzz when you visit a playground that you've set up or built and you see all the kids playing on it and having a great time. It must give you a bit of a thrill.
Yeah, it is, very much so. And a great thrill, you know, right on through the chain, because, you know, various people have to make certain decisions to have various spaces get done, and so to see them sort of, if nothing else, just, you know, wipe their forehead with a sigh of relief that it came off and it worked and it's been well received by the community. But it's great to see it activated. I mean, that's what it's all about, having people clambering all over it and engaging with it and finding surprises and creating their own surprises as to how they interact with what you've created. So, but it's a great process, working with communities and then working to deliver it and build it and tweak it. And also, because I do largely naturalistic spaces, to see it evolve. You know, once it goes in the ground, 10 years later it can look dramatically different once the planting has come on and the landscape has taken, you know, reasserted its place.
Yeah, there's quite a lot to it, I suppose, that people don't really appreciate at first sight. You know, we're talking to Rick McConaughey this morning, who's a children's playground designer, and he's also the regional vice president for the Play Association in the Asia Pacific. If you'd like to talk about playgrounds, some that you might have played on when you were a kid, or some that you might have visited as a parent. Rick, I've got a couple from the text here. We had long metal swings on chains. The greatest challenge was to swing so high that it went over the top. That was back in the 50s, says Helen. You can't actually spin a swing all the way around, can you?
Well, I don't think that whether you can or you can't has never stopped any of us trying. So I think that's possibly the point.
Would you go for the big leap when you get to the top of the
GG? Look, this is the thing. Anything that gets put in will get fully tested by, you know, kids to the limit of its capacity.
So. By the hardest of the testers.
Yeah, that's right. And they find absolutely new ways of... there's a lovely phrase when we're trying to assess things for safety, the phrase reasonably foreseeable. And I've always thought that was kind of an interesting notion that they bothered to put the word reasonably in, because it can be... Kids can... Their imagination to push the limits of things is profound, and so they had to say, well, is it reasonably foreseeable that they were going to do that?
Children and reason, this is not necessarily in the same sentence there, are they? Herb says, I didn't need a playground when I was young, I just had a rock and half a stick.
And that, thank you, Perth, because that's just a wonderful comment, you know, and in fact, it's as true today as it ever was. And there was a wonderful little line that stuck with me, funnily enough, which is very counter to what I guess I do professionally, that the number of playgrounds we provide kind of reflects the dysfunctionality of society, because it means our cities and our urban spaces are becoming less and less a space for children and less capable for providing for their needs. So we have to create these little pockets of intense activity that replace what they used to be able to do just about anywhere. So it's a really interesting reflection about, you know, this kind of provision and what's driving it. So go the rock and the stick.
Cherry, good morning. Cherie?
Good morning.
Hi there.
Good morning, Rick. I've listened with interest to what you have to say.
Oh, thank you.
I'd like to mention log swings, as we call them here in North Queensland, and also rocket ships or rocket ship parks. The log swing was a long plank of wood, a bit like a painter's plank that sort of swung end on. But they're lethal, actually. I remember school fates and things, our school playground, the principal would tie the log swing to its mooring so it couldn't be used because children running around at the school fate couldn't be trusted not to, you know, knock the brains out of their little brother who was sort of wandering towards it and was far too young to get on it.
Yep.
And splinters in the backs of the legs in the darn thing.
And
the rocket ship.
Hang on a sec, Cherry. The log swing you're talking about.
Yes.
The other thing with that is it went actually right up, didn't it? So they could actually go right up to the top.
You could almost hit the bars.
Yeah, you'd get three either end and just really crank it.
The boys was to scare the daylights out of the girls by going higher and higher.
That's right.
Hung on for dear life.
I'd forgot about them.
40, 50 years ago.
They were really dangerous, weren't they?
Oh, quite, quite.
You don't see them anymore, Rick?
No, they were inherently unstoppable, and that's the thing. I mean, ultimately, the things that got kind of, you know, persuaded to be taken out in the end were... There was a strong reaction at the time. I was right there when it was happening, and it was like, well, hang on a minute, I remember having a great time on them. But there were a couple of them, in reality, that were just inherently uncontrollable and just downright dangerous, and that was one of them. You've got three kids on either end of a, you know, 10-foot plank of, you know, 50 mil timber, and with rigid rises, you know, not chain where some of the force can dissipate, and they were just simply deadly. If someone walked in the path of it accidentally, it was lights out, I'm afraid.
Yeah, Cherry, you wanted to also mention the rocket ship parks.
I did too. My main town, I live on a farm, but is Ingham in North Queensland.
Oh, lovely.
A wonderful rocket ship in Rotary Park in the centre of town.
Mm.
But I've seen pictures of them everywhere, and I'm just wondering whether it was something promoted by Rotary International. The reason I ask that is that I just wonder if there was a pattern sent out to all welders and manufacturers, and just everybody decided to make one. The reason I also ask is there's a movie called Nothing to Lose with Martin Lawrence in it, and in the last frame of that movie, if anyone's interested, have a look, and there's a rocket ship in the park, in a sort of barbecue scene in a park. And I thought, well, they're all over the world.
Did you say the one is still there in Ingham, or?
No, it was removed several years ago, partly because of maintenance. I'm actually a Shire councillor in Hinchinbrookshire here, and the maintenance and your asset management, it's just too dangerous, and too many little kids were getting stuck up the top, and sending the big kids up to get them was just not something we would be doing with our risk management policy.
So, Cherry, it's your fault, is it, that they're not there anymore?
Well, I think the council of the day, I do have to say, this sounds like it is a politician's answer, but I wasn't in council at the time.
Oh, yeah, okay.
There was some controversy about removing it, and why couldn't it be repaired? And it did go for repairs many times, but I do believe it's lying on its side in the council yard at the moment.
So really?
It's rather sad to see the old rocket ship, but just got too dangerous. And in our climate with rust and kids getting scratched and things like that, it just you couldn't have it any longer.
Oh, someone's got to save it from the council yard.
Beg pardon?
Someone's got to save it from the council yards and stick it at the end of their driveway or something.
I hope I'm not talking out of turn, but I do believe that's its resting place currently.
That's Cherry, thank you very much for those memories. Great.
Not a problem. And thank you, Rick, for your comments. I'm really interested in the way you suggested about how kids learn to play. A lot happens at the bottom of the steps of the slippery slide. Yeah. A bit of jostling and a little bit of action, and if you sit and observe it, you can see the kids learning all sorts of things about life.
Yeah, it is. It's wonderful to see how they interact. Thank you for the memory, because the rocket ships were great. They did have a life too, like most things that we build. So some of them got taken out for the reasons of standards, and others simply because they'd reached their use-by date. Thanks for that memory. And a great memory of Ingham too. I stayed at Allingham, which is just down the road. I think it's called Forest Beach by the locals. And was travelling around Australia and ended up stopping there for well over 3 months. It's a beautiful part of the world.
That's a fair way to be. Fair while to be stopping.
That was in a different phase of life, but yeah, it's a pretty special place. So.
Now, the rocket ship parks, getting back to that for a sec, because when we did our little bit of research a few months back on the program, I did see some photos of rocket ships in American parks. Oh, they might have been Canada, but in North American parks, and they look slightly different. The same idea, same concept, but a different shaped rocket ship. So I've got an idea maybe they took that design and altered it slightly and made a particular Australian version of the rocket ship slide.
Yeah, it's probably because they're in the northern hemisphere, so they were slightly closer to the moon, so they needed a different kind of aerodynamics to
Of course, that's what it would have been.
I think a lot of, and this is a wonderful part of play, and some would argue not so wonderful, but there is a... To borrow an artistic phrase, there's a degree of appropriation happens with design, and people see something and become inspired and want to reproduce it. And if it's not available, you know, we now sort of chuff things all around the world quite comfortably, but back in the good old days, you know, getting a rocket ship out from America was probably quite a laborious thing. So maybe we went down to the local ironworks and saw if someone couldn't knock one up here. So, and that was inherently part of the problem too, in terms of whether they had shown any difference to the standards of the time and whether the standards of the time related to things. Some of the rocket ships had an inherent kind of entrapment issue with them that Cherry alluded to, and they did have inherent problems with them, but they definitely were put out by different manufacturers over time, both internationally and fabricated here, so there'll be little variations.
Got a text here, we still have an operational steel rocket ship in Deniliquin.
Don't tell anyone, for heaven's sake. I'd like to keep it, but thanks. I'm going to Victoria soon. I'll pop in and revisit my childhood.
We'd love to see a photo of that, Lee.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I'd love to see that.
The old metal slides used to fry legs and burn your bum in the middle of summer. You mentioned that before.
Yeah, they do, and that's the nature of it. And we're talking about, you know, risk assessment. Well, part of a risk assessment presumably is to be able to figure out whether it's too hot to get on the metal slide, sort of thing. So that's, as I said, that's just part of the whole experience in reality. And hopefully now play spaces provide an alternative. If the slide's not working because it's too hot, that there's a range of other possibilities and activities and spaces to take your body and your imagination in to try other things.
Quite often nowadays they put shade cloth too over the playground, so that takes
out. Yeah, I'd always go a tree myself. In 5 years your shade cloth's going to deteriorate. And in that same 5 years, your tree's just going to get better and better. So I'd be going tree myself, but personal preference. So.
We'll mention that to the council, Rick.
Please do.
Joe joins us. Good morning, Joe.
Hello, how are you?
All right, thanks. What did you want to mention?
Oh, well, the old slide that we had at the beach here, it did old Russ did it about halfway down. It presented a bit of a problem. And then we had another swing. It was... Well, they called it a roundabout. It was like a wooden circle.
Yep.
With supported on the centre pole like a teepee.
Yep.
And if you got that going good enough, you could get it to swing in and hit the post.
Yeah, I remember that one. You didn't want to fall on the inside of it.
No.
Like a big teepee, like a big triangular.
Yeah.
Shape with a and you stood on the ring around the outside and it swung around a pole.
Yeah, that's the one. And talking about the roundabouts, there's a program there a while back there over in Africa. They set up this roundabout there for the kids, and they connected it up onto a pump to pump water out of the well for the village.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What a great idea.
And all these kids were racing around the circle. They're pushing this thing and riding on it, and you see the water pumping up into the tank. Yeah, it was a real good setup.
What a great idea. That's
brilliant, Joe.
Isn't it? Good on you, Joe. Thank you for that.
Thanks for that, mate. I've got to work on a whole lot of sustainable projects, and you may well have just sowed a seed there, Joe. So thank you very much for that.
What a great idea.
That's brilliant.
If you're going to get the kids working for you.
And we'll have to tap it into the grid, see if we can generate some electricity as well.
That's fantastic. And the beaches didn't really, all the rust and the salt around beaches wasn't really conducive to metal playgrounds, was it? You get rust spots in the slides and stuff like that.
Yeah, everything, these spaces require maintenance, and that was a little bit of the problem too, and particularly with the witch's hat that Joe referred to, there was some issues with the corrosion going on down underground where it wasn't even visible as the metal interacted with the soil and the concrete and things like that, and we had slightly less understanding, and occasionally they'd just topple over because they corroded below ground level. So,
you wouldn't want to be on that when it fell over. They were big.
No, yeah, they had some momentum and some weight behind them. But that once again, that was one of the ones that kind of got identified along with the plank swing. But that was far more to do with its capacity to fall over, just because of the interactions underground rather than something inherently problem above ground. But it was also pretty dodgy above ground, actually. It was pretty full on. You had to have your wits about you.
Then there were those roundabouts, the old style roundabouts that just had sort of mesh across them.
Yeah.
And a big, big metal wheel that just spun around.
They're making a comeback, actually. So that's exciting because people are recognising that some of these things, we have the technology to manage them. They're probably not as exhilarating as they once were, but they are, at least they're making a comeback as an opportunity. And there's even clever manufacturers now that are designing giant mouse wheels, so getting spinning the other way. So literally kids can get in and do the mouse wheel run.
I'm hearing lots of electricity being generated.
Yeah, that's right. I think so. Lots of energy being expended, that's for sure.
Good morning, Larry.
Good morning. Just want to mention a few parks that we've been to. Just mentioning about the mouse wheel. There's one up at Blaney. Blaney's
Park. There is.
With the flying fox and that. But also Moree has a modern rocket ship, I shouldn't say, at the moment. Yeah, so it's a new one there. And also at Inverell, where it's standing at the moment, and a lot of equipment like aerobics equipment down on the riverbank there that the adults and the children can play on. And Maitland also has an all-accessible playground they just built. But when we travel around, like we're caravanning at the moment, and we usually pull up for the children to play, and that's sort of one of the main things, is depending on what equipment is at each park. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a nice one if you're around Blaney. There's a nice one up at Bathurst that they're pretty proud of that they've just finished at Christmas too. So
that's
good on you, Larry. Thank you for that.
Thank you. Bye.
It's quite interesting to hear the diversity of what he was reflecting on too. And, all the different things. Some are exercise based, some are nature based, some are equipment based. It's interesting to see what the different regional centres sort of choose to do with the space that they.
Yeah, and. I'd suppose you'd know them all, wouldn't you? If there was a really good playground around the country, the playground designers would get on the phone to each other and say, have you checked out the one down at Mullaney? And so you'd pretty soon know about it.
Well, I've got the double whammy, actually, because having young critters as well, you hear that's the greatest advocate for a space is the word of mouth through the... Well, basically the mothers' groups or the parent groups or whatever you hear about them and even interstate, the way families are now, there's often families in different cities and they can sort of tell you about other ones if you're travelling or going on holiday or you've got to go. So, you do tend to hear about them, but,
I've got a question here from Ray. How much has the threat of litigation impacted on the design and construction?
I think... I'm not sure if it was the threat of litigation that impacted on it so much as the fear of the threat of litigation, if I can be a bit pedantic, because, playgrounds has bought into the politics of fear just like everything else. And certainly there was a period there where the risk managers and so on didn't quite know how to react to these spaces. They're intrinsically challenging / risky because that's the nature of what they are by definition. So there was a bit of an overreaction to it. But the And it's not an overreaction in the sense that we don't want to see children get injured, but it certainly has a great impact. But they're not attracting the kind of litigation that is perceived in some of the media. And occasionally sensationalist reporting can kind of go to the detriment of play spaces and give people perceived fears of what goes on there. So it has an impact, but you've just got to manage it, and all clients will react differently to those sorts of challenges.
The spiral spider.
What
was that one?
I don't know. There's various spider nets and things. I'm not sure about the spider, but I wonder whether it makes me recall the old curved iron elephant slides.
Oh, yeah.
Well, so pretty excellent.
I remember them. What about the digger diggers?
Yeah, well, they're okay. The only slight objection I have to digger diggers is if they're put in a sandpit that's too small, because a sandpit also wants to provide a bunch of free space where kids, you know, those things can be pretty lethal. They've got 360-degree movement, a 1 meter each, and a giant, you know, sharp metal bucket at the end. So if it takes up the whole sandpit, then it pretty much reduces the sandpit to a one-player opportunity. So it make the sandpit big enough to stick one of them in the corner, but have a whole other end where it's just free sand play, and the kids will have an absolute ball.
Rick, there is another rocket in Enmore, apparently.
Maybe we should just do some sort of, you know, rocket ship map.
We should do a tour, a rocket ship tour of the country. Deniliquin in southwestern New South Wales, by the way. And in Adelaide, there was a phase in the 70s of building geodisc domes made of metal to climb on from Omar.
There was an awesome space up in Monash, inspired by a gentleman who did it as a gift to the community. And over time, he built about 200 different pieces of play equipment, and they even set up little kind of physics experiments related to them, and it became a great pit stop for the interstate buses to stop at. And sadly, it met its demise late last century, and that was a bit of a shame. It was a one of a kind, and he'd certainly explored all those sorts of geodiscs and things with his wonderful work. But they're a bit more sophisticated now, and I mean no disrespect, but you can certainly get them now, and certainly a lot of the European play equipment companies are very much into building giant discs, usually with rope membranes.
All right, look, we've got about 8 minutes till the next ABC News. I've got a full board here, so let's try and whiz through a few of these calls, eh, Rick?
Yeah, sure.
Good morning, Jeanette.
Good morning. There's a spaceship in Ulverston.
Oh, is there one in Ulverston, in Tassie?
Yes. And your guest would be a dampener on kids' sense of adventure. My first adventure was the moment I was conceived. The second was when I was born, and thereon, every day, every hour was an adventure. Yes, I played on swings. Yes, you can swing over the bar, because I did.
You did a 360.
Not deliberately. It was just, it happened. And I hit the ground, and I walked home with two hands hanging down, and I was sure every bone was broken, but anyway, they weren't, you know. And I was fine.
Yeah.
I didn't have another go.
You obviously didn't get all the way around. Thanks,
and,
Jeanette.
You know, you don't have a sense of adventure. You don't jump on the Bondi tram. You don't go to the city. You don't go to museums. You don't go to the art gallery. You don't go to the domain. You know to whom you're speaking to.
Thank you, Jeanette.
Okay. Bye. Be good. Bye.
You too. Ta-da.
I think Jeanette raises a really big issue, and I think the kids still do have that sense of adventure, and it's incumbent upon us as adults to allow them to express that. So I hope I'm not dampening it. I hope I'm actually advocating for letting the kids take on that sense of adventure, maybe with a slightly more managed way because of the expectations of society. But, yeah, certainly kids still have adventure, and they really need to engage with it and learn from it. And Jeanette makes a great point.
Yeah, no, I don't think you put a dampener on at all, Rick. Caroline, good morning.
Oh, good morning. Rocket ship in Mudgee.
In Mudgee as well?
Oh, really? Oh, that's local. I'm in the Blue Mountains. I'll be going, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's quite a little isolated park. It's been there. I'm in my 40s now, and I played on it as a child.
Yeah. Have you played on it as an adult?
But the council...
We didn't get an answer on that one, Caroline. Have you played on it as an adult?
I ignore the age.
Then yes.
The council have welded a metal plate covering the holes that go to the higher levels, added two plastic modern slides, and I took my little great niece there, and she loved it.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for telling us about it, Caroline. That's great. Look, we got it. There must be about eight of them, or eight, 10 even, around the country that's still standing, of those rocket ship parks. That's great. Karen, good morning.
Hi. I just wondered if you've looked at a lot of the European parks, and with the restriction on space, we came across one in Salzburg, and all it had was a slippery dip. But this thing was, I've never seen anything like it. I was too scared to climb it, and I'll usually climb anything. It was probably 10 ladders high.
Whoa.
It was probably equivalent to about a two-storey building. And my five-year-old, no worries, went right up because it was really well boxed in to the top of the ladders, came down like a rocket, unbelievable, and the ending was extremely long and flat. So there was no problem with safety. It was like doing the luge. Incredible. And I just thought, you know, when you've got restriction on space, those engineers in Europe, you know, they obviously get out there and they do one incredible contraption. And it was just amazing. But the other thing I wanted to ask was, I live in a regional city, and so it's a very big city, but it's we just have very bad playground equipment, hardly any, and the council areas north and south of us are really well equipped. So I'm just wondering, are there any tips on how we can get together to improve it as a parent? Who do we try to lobby?
Yeah, great question, Karen.
Yeah, it is. Look, a lot of community groups are driving play space provision at the moment and putting together proposals and things. I'm working on a number of them at the moment. Probably the most wonderful at the moment is up at Marysville, and they just are absolutely driving it from the bottom up, and they've really got everyone engaged and very excited about a project coming online. But certainly communities can get organised. It tends to take, you know, a person of a degree of energy and commitment, because they don't happen overnight. They do take time. But certainly speaking to your local councillors and so on, and making them aware that they're an attraction, that other towns, people are travelling. You know, I think people knew well before that there was a great space up at Orange, and that drew people to the town and families to the town that then went into the town. So they have, and also make great provision for the local community. So there's certainly the potential for people power, and it certainly happens a lot. There's another one in Kyneton happening in Victoria at the moment, another one at our Deer Park near in Brimbank. So they certainly come up, and then there's tied to that, then there's the next step, which is also, you know, community gardens and places like Sherry's and things that grow out of people power.
Have you seen many of the playgrounds that we were talking about there in Europe, and the tall style short ones?
Because of my role, I have to visit and attend the board from time to time and so on, and I certainly have seen them, and it's probably a little bit different to kind of what I do. I understand what it is, and it's a great and exhilarating thing, and it reminded me that for a moment of lucidity there, the Tate Museum actually installed two gigantic stainless steel spiral slides internally in the gallery, and you know, was reported widely as one of the most exhilarating exhibitions in the gallery for some time as adults reconnected with their childhood and exhilaration and freedom of, you know, embarrassment and things like that.
But that's exactly what art's meant to do, isn't it?
Yeah, and they are great things, but they are great monumental engineering things, and I tend to stick a bit closer to the ground, not completely, but trying to engage with nature and trees and rocks and things, and remind us that a lot of the play isn't just on the equipment, and play isn't just about equipment, but it's about imagination and interaction with natural materials and peers and friends and people we haven't met, and all sorts of things, plus our inner selves. So
yeah, we've got about a minute to go here, Rick. I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you, what is your favourite playground in the country?
Oh, that's easy. My favourite playground in the country is whichever one my two little critters happen to be in with me.
Oh, that's... can you tell us a couple of good ones?
Look, it's a bit hard because I've probably done some of them, but I did mention the Bathurst one, and there's one in, for Victoria, there's one out at Templestowe called Finns Park. It's now Wombat Bend.
Someone says there's one in Warrnambool.
Yeah, there's a wonderful one in Warrnambool. There's a surprisingly big slide down at Apollo Bay that I discovered one day. There's a great spot down in Geelong for all abilities. There's an iconic one in Hayes Paddock. There's new ones popping up all the time. time. There's a little one that's just gone in down at Queenscliff. So they're
good work, Rick.
And dotted around, I believe.
Now, Rick, we've got to wind it up there because the news is coming up in a second. Look, thank you very much for your time this morning.